So, this evening we'll take up case number 42 of the Mumon Khan. A woman comes out of meditation. So, by way of introduction, I live near the University of Connecticut campus. And many years ago, there was this amazing department that was started by Frank Ballard. It's a puppetry department, and I used to take the kids regularly there to see the puppet shows. And some of the shows had these huge puppets that were like 10 feet tall, and others had these tiny little string puppets. And they were always like beautiful and exciting. And over the years, there must have been hundreds of puppets made. And we no longer have that department now at the university, but there is this museum that houses, every 2 months, they change the puppets that come from that time. And you can go and look at all these exquisite characters. Today, Koan reminded me of the kind of drama that got played out in those puppet shows. There were like gods and devils and wise people and foolish people and life and death. And each puppet got to play their part in the drama. And all of the audience became just willing participants in losing ourselves in this illusion. Loving every minute of it. So tonight, this koan presents a play that's been offered to us by Mumon. It's called A Woman Comes Out of Meditation. And I hope by the end of this talk you'll end up loving it as much as I do. Here it is. Once, in ancient times, the world-honored one came to the place where many Buddhas were assembled. When Manjushri arrived there, the Buddhas all returned to their original places. A single woman was there, close to the Buddhist throne, in the deepest meditation. Manjushri said to the Buddha, "How is it that this woman is so close to your throne and I cannot be?" Buddha spoke to Manjushri and said, "You may awaken this woman from her deep meditation and ask her yourself how this can be." Manjushri walked around her three times, snapped his fingers once, then took her up to the Brahma heaven and tried all his supernatural powers, but could not bring her out of her deep meditation. The world-honored one said, "Even 100,000 Manjushris could not get her out of her concentrated condition. But down below, past 1,200,000,000 countries, as innumerable as the sands of the Ganges, there is a bodhisattva named Mumio." And there's a footnote here, a bodhisattva in the early stages of practice. "He will be able to awaken this woman from her profound meditation." Thereupon, Mumio emerged out of the earth and bowed to the world-honored one, who told him what he wanted him to do. Mumio then walked to the woman, snapped his fingers once, and at this, she came out of her meditation. It's a strange one, isn't it? So, what's the love in this play? Well, let's look at the characters, first of all. First, we have Manjushri. I mean, this is my hero. He's wise, and he's spacious, and he's realized. He always says the price of wisdom is cutting through delusion. No nonsense. Come back to practice. Back to practice over and over until right and wrong and good and bad worlds are all transcended. Complete equality, complete emptiness. all realize, Manjushri, including Shakyamuni Buddha. You'd think he would at least be the hero of this drama. But it's not looking this way. He didn't even get invited to this. So what's up with that? And then we have this woman in the koan. Says she's single. Sometimes she's described as young. And at the time of this drama, she would have been seen as kind of inferior, impure, too sinful to attain Buddhahood. There was a very strong bias against women. So I guess we could kind of imagine that she's just sort of this temptress sitting next to Buddha. And in this honored seat, we have this kind of really what is probably an ordinary woman. Everyone else had gone home, but she sat. She'd really taken her sitting to heart. She sat in samadhi. Now, samadhi is defined as a state of concentration where subject and object are transcended. It's not the goal of practice, but it sets up a kind of a conducive mental state for the accident of kensho to occur. Great samadhi is a samadhi of like no obstruction, no problems. What comes up, you know, we're human beings, so. Things come up. No problem, no objection. Just this. Just this. Just this. And this can be a stuck place, too. One gets stuck when you don't know it's time to make an effort to start playing your part in the world. In the scheme of things, time to come back to the life of washing dishes and cooking meals and raising children. This seems to be the state of this woman sitting here. And then there's Buddha. He seems to have set the whole drama in motion. And you wonder, is he confronting his teacher? Or is he cooperating with Manjushri in this drama? Maybe he's just Buddha being Buddha, teaching the middle way, doing what he does in the world. He's kind of the director of the play, getting things set up so the action can happen. And lastly, we have Mumio. I read that Mumio means seed of delusion. He's a lowly beginner, deeply deluded in dualistic thought. He's innocent. He represents the world of phenomena and the world of separation of things. So at this point, you might wonder, like, who are the wise ones here, and who are the fools, and who are the gods, and who are the devils? So, to answer this, let's look at the setting. Where is it? Well, it's right here. It's always right here. You, sitting on the cushion. It's all you. And you're all the characters. Now, all these characters are one, but oneness is not sameness. We all have different roles to play. We're all one, yes. We're all the same, no. So each aspect. Each character has its own freedom. And Muman says this in the verse. One could awake her, the other could not. Both have their own freedom. A God mask and a devil mask. The failure is wonderful indeed. So what is this freedom? Well, a horse is free to run. A bird is free to fly. A fish is free to swim underwater. Each one of us has our own freedom, our own perfection. This is the real, actual perfection we have, not some wish for a fantasy of perfection. So when Manjushri was unable to wake her, he manifested his true freedom by not being able to wake her. So in the drama of our own lives, each character has a part to play. There are two aspects to being human. One is the essential, the absolute, that which our heart sutra points to. No eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, no color, sound, smell, taste, touch, or what the mind takes hold of. And the other aspect, the world of differences, where there is eye, ear, nose, tongue, color, sound, smell, taste, touch. Two months ago, time passes so fast, my father turned 100 years old. My brother and I had planned a 4-day open house for his birthday. He kind of tried to prepare me for the fact that he thought no one would come. Because he would say, I don't know who'll come, you know. I don't know many people anymore. So as it turned out, over those 4 days, 60 people showed up. As I think of it, 60 momios showed up. Manjushri wasn't invited to this party. It wasn't a time to wield a sword or look to emptiness. Buddha and Manjushri were free just to let this party play out and be the place where the drama unfolded. And these 60 wonderful momios showed up and awakened my dad. Awakened him to all their reflections on the perfection of his life that he led. They came and exercised their freedom by telling stories and memories and funny incidents that happened. And they expressed gratitude for their time together with him. They honored the moments that touched their hearts, and they expressed love for the man my father had been to them. These were reflections on a perfect life. Each person took their own freedom and gave him the wisdom that all things are empty could never have given. For 4 days, this simple farmer felt the joy of receiving compassionate expressions of the lives that he touched. This, to me, is a koan of compassion. Compassion for all the deluded characters that want to have their moment in your life. The lively world of gain and loss and right and wrong and health and illness and birth and death. This busy life is where we practice. The price of wisdom is cutting through delusion. And just like the Heart Sutra says, all is empty. But this can be a stuck place. We return to our practice in the midst of karma and in the midst of delusion. Why? Because this is the place where our practice can come alive. We cease desiring to know, to understand, so we can return to innocence, so the world can become fresh and new. Franz Kafka said, "You need not leave your room. Remain seated at your table and listen. You need not even listen. Simply wait. You need not even wait. Just be quiet, still, and solitary. The world will freely offer itself to you unmasked. It has no choice. It will roll in ecstasy at your feet." Our ordinary mind is lived as a life of practice. This ordinary, innocent mind is a free mind, a perfect mind. At times, we must just put the sword down. The empty nature of this life drama is an essential truth, but not the end. Wisdom must come to your actual moment, that actual moment-to-moment life. It's there that we get to manifest compassion. If wisdom does not manifest as compassion, it is useless. Let compassion melt your heart. Let compassion melt your hard edges. Let compassion melt away your judgments and opinions. Mary Oliver has a poem you're probably all familiar with, but she speaks to this in her poem Wild Geese. You don't have to be good. You don't have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese high in the clean blue air are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world will offer itself to your imagination. Calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things. You know, even if you live 100 years, your life is short. All those mumios who came to bless my father have my eternal gratitude. He went to bed that night feeling very tired and very happy and very loved. He slept well, and the next morning, he died. This is your life. And this is how it ends. If we're lucky, we get to know our place in the family of things. We get to know our belonging, our oneness, right in the midst of this I don't know world, right in the midst of the good and the bad and the ugly. It's ours. And then the play of this precious life is over. Life is short. Please hold to your practice. Hold as if your life depended on it, because it does. We'll end there.